This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, everyone. So we are here today for a really fun episode. We're going to be talking to some Overdrive readers and book lovers about one of my favorite topics, fandoms. And so our first guest today, we have Morgan. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. To kick us off, can you let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and what you do at Overdrive?
So I work in the education sales department. So I help people get their Sora audiobooks and ebooks working and add new stuff and log in and all that good stuff.
Perfection. We love to hear everyone spread the word about Sora. So we're here to talk about fandoms. There are billions, seemingly. And so I am curious to know what fandom you would consider yourself a part of.
So I have been a part of a lot of different fandoms over the years. I think like a lot of people who are in my age band, I'm a millennial, I had a Harry Potter phase, but I discovered the Sherlock Holmes series when I was in high school and decided that I was going to be a lifer. And then lucky for me, the BBC series came out just a couple of years later, so I could just latch on to that, which has been pretty fruitful for me.
Oh my goodness. I'm so happy that we're going to talk a little bit about Sherlock, because the BBC adaptation of Sherlock was such a vibe.
Yeah, you can't see it right now, but I have an oil painting of Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock right over my head.
Oh, I might need a photo of that so we can share with the listeners. But so you said this a little bit. When did your love of this book series author sort of begin?
So I had this phase in high school where I was trying to read like all of the intellectual kind of series and be like a professional nerd, right? And yes. So I started reading the Sherlock Holmes series because I'd always kind of liked the mystery. I liked Nancy Drew. I liked the Hardy Boys, Encyclopedia Brown. And so I was interested in this too. I liked that Victorian era stuff. And so that was there as well. And then they put out that Robert Downey Jr. movie really soon after that, which was also just a vibe, very yes. different vibe, but also a vibe. And as a person who is very inclined to ship characters, I don't think I've ever encountered in my life a pair of characters who needed to be shipped as hard as those two.
Yeah. Oh, 1000%. And I'm interested to know then, what are some of the reasons that you love this so much?
I just think there's something beautiful about how timeless these stories and these characters are. Like they are, let me think, over 100 years old now. The first ones were published in like the late 1880s, 90s. Mm-hmm. And we're still making different versions, like House MD. People are just now rediscovering is a Sherlock Holmes story with the serial numbers filed off. I could see your jaw dropping because yes, House is a Sherlock story. That. Yeah. Listen to even the names, House and Wilson, Holmes and Watson. Their apartment is literally 221B. They solve medical mysteries.
Okay. My mind is blown right now. Yeah. I did not put that so together. Many.
So I just think that the timelessness of the characters is beautiful. Like you could take them out of that times zone. You can take them out of that country. You can make them different genders, or you can make one of them a robot and they still have that same little spirit.
Yeah.
It can be mice, the great mouse detective.
That's such a good point. The timelessness of these characters and sort of their adaptability to all of these different interpretations works. Now, I'm interested to know if you have a particular story about what lengths you may have gone to sort of show your devotion to the fandom, whether that's purchasing a special edition book, you know, participating in a Kickstarter, going to a convention or an author signing, or like bidding for something bonkers on eBay. If there's any sort of story you might have that shows your dedication to the fandom.
So I have many of those, but the better story that I want to tell that I knew I had to come share if I was going to be on this podcast is that I got a wife out of fandom.
Okay. we're kicking this off on the highest note.
Yeah. So my partner and I met because we were both writing Sherlock fan fiction in like the 2010s. And I left a comment and we started commenting back and forth and we swapped Skype handles. And a few years later, now I live in Ohio and we're married and we have a house together.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, yeah, that's quite a I'm like, well, that's the episode, everybody. The best story of things that have resulted from the fandom. But I love that. It's so funny what brings people together. And I'm always happy when it's book inspired. Oh, well, thank you so much, Morgan, for coming on to share your love of the Sherlock fandom and relay some of those wonderful stories. I hope folks enjoy sort of little snippets that we're going to see of different fandoms and the devotion with which folks go for it. And hopefully they find new books and new things to love out of it.
And maybe spouses.
Maybe spouses. That would be even more wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on to chat with me.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Sydney. Welcome.
Hi, Emma. Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you on this episode to talk to us about fandoms.
Oh my gosh.
But for listeners who may need a little refresher or who are new, I'm going to make you introduce yourself and share what you do at Overdrive.
Love it. All right. Hello, everyone. I am Sydney, and I have the great pleasure of working with Emma every day. Actually, I am not the podcast co-host, but I work with her in her other life, which is on the training team. So I get to manage a group of incredible trainers who basically take very complex technical information and turn it into everyday learning opportunities. And Emma is one of those folks.
Thank you, Sydney. Yeah, so she's my boss, everyone. So, but I love having you on here because obviously we love to chat about books and all myriad of other things. And so it's really just kismet that we get to do all these fun things together at Overdrive.
I might even throw like a last minute whammy in here. Yeah. So we'll see. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, please.
So I have so many fandoms. Like I've written for fandom for many, many years. I have an ongoing, you know, secret on AO3 archive of our own for those not in the know. And if I happen to be, I don't want to spoil anything. So I don't know what order in which these different interviews are going to come up, but let's just say Morgan and I have a lot in common. But I have other fandoms that mostly have come from TV and other media. So I am an old school X-Files fan. I'm an old school Buffy fan. I was a Veronica Mars fan for a short period of time. Until Rob Thomas ruined it with the reboot. Ugh, the less we say about that, the better. Ditto Sherlock, P.S. Thank you for that. I was a huge Sherlock fan for a very intense period of time also, Morgan. And I do love, I was going to talk to you about Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries because that fandom act for me actually started on the TV side of things and then moved into the books. But like I said, I was going to throw a last minute wrench in here and I'm really here to talk about my book fandom.
Yes, please.
So I have lots of them. I have lots of people. Anyone who's heard me on the podcast before knows that I have a deep and abiding love for all things Rainbow Rowell and all things Kelly Link. Like those two people can do absolutely no wrong in my eyes. I will read anything that they put out and, you know, give it my all. But I'm here today to talk about Emily Henry.
Yay!
My girl, M. Hen. Let's discuss.
That's a fandom. So Emily Henry, when did you first read her, love her, which book?
My The funniest part about Emily Henry is that I read her before I knew her, if that makes sense. So my first M. Hen was A Thousand Junes.
Yes.
Which is
so
great.
You're an OG M. Hen stan.
But I didn't know. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is a great book. And I did the thing that I always do on Libby, which is like, oh, let me just like click on the author name and see what else she's written. And I feel like it didn't go anywhere from there. I was like, oh, I really like this book, but I considered it a standalone. Mm-hmm. And then many years later, I did the same thing. It kind of came up in my like, oh yeah, I forgot that I read this when I was looking through an old reading journal. And I was like, I should see what else she's done. And I had clicked on and come up with Hello. Is that right? The book that she wrote with Brittany.
Yeah.
Cavallari. I think, thank you for looking this up, even though we both have the internet at our fingertips right now.
Why? That's not how. And I'm like, you hear my Hello Girls.
Hello Girls. Right. Yeah. There. So, and I was just like, oh, I should give that a read. I remember really liking Emily Henry, but it was one of those, like, it wasn't a tepid love, but in my mind, I was just like, oh, she's one of the YA authors that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Beach Read. And I was like, I might have a new obsession. So I read Beach Read and then went back and read The People We Met on Vacation. And then not even 2 weeks after I read Beach Read, Book Lovers came out. And my life as I knew it was over. And that was it.
Yeah.
That book was my favorite book of 2022. I bought it for 1,000 people for Christmas, including my 70-something-year-old father. I was like, mm-hmm. If you want to know anything about your daughter at this stage in her life, you will read this book and we will discuss. We read books together for birthdays and Christmases. And I was like, this is the one you're reading. Guess what? This is who I am now.
Book Lovers? Book Lovers just...
It's perfect.
It was, is, and was such a perfect story. Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead. I can see you in your question.
Yeah. Like, so I'm sure it's going to be hard for us to encapsulate, yes. But why do you love Emily Henry's book so much?
She's the banter queen.
Mm-hmm.
That anybody who can write flirtation and make your reader feel it as if it were happening to you when you get champagne bubbles in your stomach reading about two people that you are not seeing with your face. Or in my case, I haven't been listening to audiobooks because I don't know her narrator yet, so I'm not sure who it is. And you're not listening with your eyes. That is a form of sorcery that I think is unparalleled. I feel like I'm having it, which is why Happy Place hit me in the gut, because I was like, this is happening to me. I am currently like sobbing at a cabin with my friends.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's such a good point. She is the queen of banter. And I feel like her books are ones where you both like kick your feet in glee, but then also sob.
Correct.
And correct. I personally love having that gamut of emotions when I'm reading too. A book.
She's one as I'm writing my own rom-com. She's one of the authors that I can go back to and study for style, study for craft without feeling like crap. Not because I'm like, oh, I'm just like, but like it gives you a sense of like, this is what I want things to feel like when people are reading my stuff versus I'll never get here. Like I'm never going to be Proust, y'all. Like that's just never going to happen. And I'm not saying that I could ever achieve what Emily Henry has, but her writing is hopeful on multiple levels. It's a hopeful read. You want these things to happen, but it's also like an aspirational read. I'm like, maybe someday I could make people feel like this. Also, she's adorable.
Yeah. She's really nice and lovely.
Oh my God. Someday.
Do you have a story in our final little bit that shows your devotion to the M. Hen fandom, any lengths you've gone to track down a book or go, so, I would say go to a convention, but that does not really apply for M. Hen, right. Although I would support an Emily Henry convention.
I would as well. So I haven't done anything too crazy in this particular fandom. I will say probably I have Sherlock stories to rival Morgan's for sure. I will say that when I was in London recently, I thought about paying the fees to check a bag on the way home so that I could take home the British editions of all of her books before I realized that I was being insane and did not do that. But yeah, I carried them around Waterstones with me for multiple hours thinking, this is worth a $50 bag charge. This is worth a $50 bag charge just so it can look good on my shelf.
I yeah. would say that carrying heavy books around a store for hours is devotion. Thank you so much for chatting, Sydney.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, welcome. We have some fun Overdrive folks here today to chat with us about fandoms. Christina, Laura, I'm going to make you both introduce yourselves and say a little bit about what you do at Overdrive. And we can start with Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina Paravalis, and I'm a metadata specialist on the content services team. And my role at Overdrive is working with metadata and working with our publisher partners to get all of our fun ebooks and audiobooks into our catalog for libraries to purchase. And I've been with Overdrive 10 years now.
Amazing. Thank you, Christina. Laura, what about you?
Hi, I'm Laura Henley. Christina and I are actually on the same team, so I'm not going to go through the same publisher metadata spiel. I am a team lead on the content metadata services team, and I've been at Overdrive 10 and a half years, so that's crazy.
Yes, but
Christina only started like a few months after me, so.
You got me my job.
I did. Christina and I have known each other a long time.
Yeah. And Laura, we were on the same team when I started.
We
at
were.
Overdrive. Yeah. For a little bit.
We were both analysts then.
Yes. Like 10 title changes ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited to have you both here. We chat a lot about this in our spare time at Overdrive. It's one of the things we love the most, that we have so many bookish friends among our colleagues. And so I'm going to ask you both which fandom we're going to be talking about today, or fandom.
It's
so hard to choose one.
I know.
I think primarily we're going to talk about Fourth Wing, but we love all things Sarah J. Maas and Colleen Hoover, and
yes,
we love Emily Henry. We love a lot of things.
Yes. So we'll focus on Fourth Wing and maybe a little bit Sarah J. Maas, because you guys have some cool stories about your devotion, which I'm going to ask you about. So yes. Individually, we'll use Fourth Wing as the example. When did your love for that book and that series begin? Like, did you read an early copy? Did you read it right when it came out? What's the story there?
Oh my gosh. I would have loved to have an early copy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there was a lot of stuff going around on Instagram where they were comparing it as like the next Throne of Glass series or the next ACOTAR series. And I was honestly kind of on the later end for pre-ordering it. But then I saw that it was on sale at Walmart, and I'm like, you know what? I've been hearing a lot about this book, and I'm going to order it. And it was like maybe a couple weeks later that it was sold out and you couldn't mm-hmm. get a copy of it at all. So that felt a little special.
Yeah. Kind of like, right, you got into it under the wire.
I did. Yes. Christina has a more harrowing story.
Not really. It's. I mean, I started hearing about it also on the internet, but then Laura started reading it. And I think a few other members of our book club outside of work were reading it as well. And yes, that was when everyone was trying to get their hands on the sprayed edges. And Emma, I think I even asked you about it. Like, where did you get it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Laura just kept telling me, oh, you guys, this book is amazing. And it's so fun. And, you know, it's so exciting. And I think I listened to the audiobook the first time around and I was hooked. I was just hooked. And Yeah, my story with getting the sprayed edges, I was researching and I think I ended up ordering it off of eBay, unfortunately, but I had to get it.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's funny because when you had asked, like, how did you get it? I literally Googled the ISBN and clicked every single bookstore result that I could find.
Yeah.
I think I checked 50 bookstores and it was like, they had a one-off copy at this bookstore in Pennsylvania.
Oh my gosh.
And so I like ordered it on the website and then I immediately called them and I was like, hi, I just ordered this. Do you actually have it?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh yeah, we have one with the sprayed edges left. And I said, that's mine. Put
it, it's mine. Preserved. That's mine.
Put it in. That's mine. I just placed the order online.
Dibs. Yes.
And so they literally put it like in the mail, I think that day. And it was like fortuitous that she had it in her hands to send
meant
to me.
To be.
It was
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of dedication to so get your hands on a copy.
So much work. Well, it was funny because I first saw it when I was on vacation. We were on vacation in Outer Banks. And I was like, oh, that book looks so good. But I've already bought like 5 books on vacation. Mm. I can't buy more.
The struggle.
What's one more book?
I was like, I'll just buy it when I get home. And literally in between that time, like that 5 days of being on vacation and going home was when it was like suddenly sold out everywhere.
It just blew up really fast.
But it's so exciting because it's just, it's great. I recommend it to a lot of people and I don't know. I just love it so much.
And so that brings me to my next question. What are some of the reasons that you love it so much? Like, what is it about Fourth Wing and the Empyrean series that just hits the vibe?
I mean, Zayden, obviously.
Yeah.
I think just the strength of Violet's character too. It kind of reminds me of like Nesta and A Court of Silver Flames and just that internal struggle and like, I can do this. I can, you know, overcome challenges. I just love that, that vibe and just the mystery and the, like, what's going on with the Venom and what's going on with all sorts of things. Like, and it's a new series too. So we're kind of excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. I was talking to someone at work about the love of the fantasy or romanticy genre and how you really have to suspend your disbelief for everything when you're a fantasy fan, because there are characters and aspects of characters that if you were reading like a contemporary romance or contemporary fiction, that would annoy you to no end. And you would be like, I can't read this. This is so unrealistic. But with fantasy, like you really put some of those things aside because you're enjoying the world building and the character development. And some of those things kind of are tropes of the genre, right? Like a weak woman finds her strength and becomes really like independent and fierce. And like those are, you know, things that we see a lot in fantasy. And I think a lot of people really enjoy that. That story, and specifically in a fantasy where it's a world that we're not in. And so there's the author gets to create her own rules, and it really kind of takes you away from some of like maybe the struggles a lot of female readers find themselves in regularly from day to day. But it's just so much fun too. And that's something that fantasy really allows you to experience when you're reading it, and you can just have fun with it and it's not so serious.
Yeah. That's such a good point, because I agree. There are certain things that we love in romanticy and fantasy that would absolutely not stand in real life or in a contemporary story. And I'm thinking particularly like of characters like Reese and Zayden, where it's like, you know, you touch her and you die. You obviously would not be in favor of that.
Yeah, you would really hate a character like that in an Emily Henry book.
It would be horrendous. But like right, in the sort of fantastical element, or like, right, there's different rules.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this, they're in war college and everyone dies and every
dragons.
Day.
Right.
And there's dragons.
In a and world like, with dragons, you can let some of these other kind of possessive characteristics of the men, you can let some of that stuff slide because it's like, I could easily die tomorrow, so I guess I don't care.
Yeah. It's so true though, right? The different rules we have for the different settings. I'd love to hear the best story that you have about any links with which you've gone to support the fandom. And I have a particular thing in mind, just knowing you both, but I'm interested, like, whether that's special edition books, joining a Kickstarter, conventions, eBay wars.
Yeah.
If there's anything that you've done that's been intensely devoted to the fandom.
I think for me, this year has been the year that I've really kind of gotten into romantasy, fantasy. I think I'm close to, I think I'm at 75 books for the year, which is the highest I have ever done. And so it is newer to me. Obviously, when I was younger, I read Harry Potter and Hunger Games and things like that. And we would do the midnight releases and but then there was a lull of time, and then now getting back into it, it's been exciting to hear about book conferences or like conventions. And so Laura and I and some friends are going to go to a PolyCon in April, and that's in Washington, D.C., but we're trying to get tickets, and you know, there's a limited number of tickets. We're on the website. It was like Taylor Swift all over again, waiting in the queue and like refreshing the page.
Yeah. And we were on the phone and I'm like,
together.
Christina, what devices are you on? I'm on my phone. How do we get this?
Yeah. So we were like, you know, we're going after a certain kind of ticket and okay, we're in this, you know, we're in the A group. No, I'm going to try to get the B group, and whoever gets tickets first, like, just let us know. Like, and as soon as we got tickets and we were in checkout, we screamed on the phone. We were like, we got them.
Yes.
It was fun. I'm going to say that a PolyCon tickets are Taylor Swift level of difficulty to get. And so it's
I was really surprised, but if anybody was going to get them, it was going to be Christina. So that's why I was like, okay, we need to figure it out together, because she's very organized in terms of like,
I'm determined.
Determined.
I did next not get level. Taylor Swift tickets. So I was trying to redeem myself for like, let's get some tickets for a special event. No, and I'm very excited. Like, and I think that's what kind of made me go after the Fourth Wing first edition also, because Rebecca Yarros is going to be at a PolyCon, and I was saying to myself, I need a signed first edition, so I have to find it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not like the tickets are even very expensive. It's just
insane.
Quantity. Yes.
Which I can appreciate. Like, I don't want to be fighting like thousands of people in line.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's very exciting.
That's so cool. And I'm going to want an update from y'all after you do a PolyCon, because in watching it the last couple of years, I'm really interested to hear about it from you guys firsthand.
Yeah, we have spreadsheets of all of the authors. I mean, there's over 200 authors going to that event, and we have a Google spreadsheet of all of the authors and books that we've read, books that we want to read. So we're trying to track everything, and it's kind of chaotic, but it's fun.
Our friends have like more physical copies of the books of a lot of authors that are going to be there. And Christina and I have like maybe like 3-ish that we maybe want to take with us. So like, we're not at like some of the levels of some of these other fandom readers, but and maybe Christina and I are just like more budget aware of how much money really goes into being a fandom reader, because it gets really overwhelming.
It is really exciting, but there's a lot out there, and you know, props to everyone who does get special editions or like the book box special editions. Those are beautiful books, and I wish I could have them all, but also shelf space is limited.
Space and money.
Right. Space and money. I mean, as someone that's a little bit of a notorious book collector, it gets rapidly very expensive to try to track down, especially things like the, you know, you all know this, the sprayed edges with the Rebecca Yarros Fourth Wing, where folks are selling it on eBay for a really high markup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a $30 book.
Right.
And it's on sale for, you know, $300. So it is cost prohibitive to a point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's people like trading like the new, the second book with the sprayed edges for copies of the first edition of the first book with sprayed edges. It's nuts.
Yeah. And like we could go on a whole chat about the like scarcity mindset with the limited editions and the sprayed edges, but
it really gets you. It really does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We won't go down that rabbit hole, but thank you both so much for coming on. I'm so excited we got to chat a little bit about the Fourth Wing fandom, and I cannot wait for an Apollycon update in spring.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hello, Sarah. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So we're here to chat fandoms, and before we do, could you introduce yourself and share a little bit about what you do at Overdrive?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Sarah Filiberto. I am a digital content librarian in the public library collection development area. So basically what that means is that we create lists of books for people, and all of those fantastic lists that you see in your Libby app, like, you know, new reads, cozy mysteries, everything like that. Those have been created by my team. And so basically we get to look through books all day and make up cool lists for people to see in Libby.
Such a fun job.
Yeah, I love it.
Part of the reason that makes you an expert and a great guest for this episode. So what fandom are we going to be chatting about today?
I went through so much back and forth on this because I am in so many fandoms, but I had to go with my one true love of Star Wars.
Okay. That's perfect. Well, so let me ask you this. What were some of the other ones you were debating? We'll talk about Star Wars, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. So there's Doctor Who, there's Marvel. I also really heavily debated going into like contemporary romance because that's like a new fandom for me. But I think I'm going to give it a little bit until I have more books under my belt.
Absolutely. So when did your love of Star Wars begin? Like, what was the first thing that prompted this sort of fascination?
So obviously Star Wars was like a 1977 movie. I am an 80s or late 80s, early 90s baby. So that is way before my time. So my love started when The Phantom Menace came out. And that is like my first real memory of being at a Star Wars movie and like falling in love with it. And everything just kind of snowballed from there.
Obviously, this started as a film series and has then sort of exploded into all kinds of different adaptations. And so with the way that you enjoy Star Wars, are you like a diehard for just the films? Do you engage with any of the book series that have spawned from this? or like these spinoff shows or anything like that? Like, where does that take you?
All of the above.
Okay. I was going to add.
Like, literally all of the above. I mean, obviously, it started with the film series, and I've been through so many of the book series, but I feel like that's like an impossible task because there are so many of them that if I tried to list them all, you would not have a short podcast. And then obviously, it's gone into the spinoff shows. I've also been to conventions and have like seen the depths of what other fans will go to for it. So I feel like my fandom is very small compared to what other people get into. I mean, I've seen cosplayers, I've seen like the 501st Legion of like stormtroopers that people you know, help out with and other stuff like that. So it's just, yeah, it's definitely all of the above.
There's two really hi, Joe's here. Surprise, coming in out of nowhere. There's two really interesting parts of that as well, that like, number one, the 501, the fact that they are like Civil War reenactors, but for a fictional, the dedication to that alone. But the other thing that I want to talk about with the books is canonicity. The fact that there are so many different canons in Star Wars, things that are originally that were part of the canon that now have been removed with the new series. And what is it like to have that kind of ever-changing flow of what's real? And how do you experience the canon?
I mean, it's fandom? Impossible to keep track of, for starters. If you, like, honestly, trying to keep track of what is and is not canon anymore is just, could be a full-time job in and of itself. But as for like what's real, I feel like that is just dependent on the person. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm stuck with like, oh, the EU isn't canon anymore, so I'm not going to read those books because it doesn't matter in this realm of the universe or that realm. It's just, if I like the books, I'm going to read them. And if they're not canon to someone, then who cares? I mean, if I enjoy them, I feel like that's all that matters. And I think that just goes for every other person who's reading them too. Like, for every book, it's reader. And if you enjoy that and you don't care if it's real, then who cares?
Absolutely. I love that approach to fandom, because I mean, every fandom that you listed that you're like, I could pick from so many of these, can have the very diehard. I'll just say, I was on Tumblr in, you know, the like Tumblr heyday. Same. Of fandoms. That's how I started watching Sherlock, Doctor Who, Supernatural, yep, Marvel movies. Like, this speaks to me, but I appreciate that approach of let's enjoy what we enjoy.
Yeah. Otherwise, things just get way too divisive and it just gets really ugly really fast.
Yeah. It takes the fun out of it, I think.
Yeah.
So what is the best story you have about any lengths you've gone to for your fandom of choice? So whether that is like purchasing like memorabilia or special editions or participating in Kickstarters or going to conventions. I'm interested if you have like a favorite memory or story that shows your devotion.
Oh, I definitely do. And it's like fairly recent, within like the last year also. So I go to a couple conventions regularly and finally decided to bite the bullet, so to speak, and to get like photo ops with some of the voice actors for the Star Wars Clone Wars TV show, which is probably the highlight of my life. So there were, it was a 4-person photo op with the voice actors who did Ahsoka, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul. And I had a replica lightsaber with me that it was going to be in the photo. And so you walk into the little, you know, booth that they're doing the photos in, and James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan, sees the lightsaber and he goes, well, does it turn on? I'm like, of course it does. He's like, well, then you have to have it on for the photo. And I'm like, whatever you want, sir. Anything for you.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that has been the absolute highlight of my Star Wars fandom experiences by far. And it's hilarious because if I show the photo to other people, like their voice actors, no one will really know who they are. It's very different than if I were to show them a photo of, like, you know, Hayden Christensen or Ewan McGregor or something like that. But it's just, yeah, I was fangirling a lot.
I love the devotion to voice actors because, right, you post that on social and everyone's like, who, what? But you know, and that's the most important part.
Absolutely. It's like, I could go to so many lengths to tell you what these people have done, but just go listen to their work.
Right. My friends were just at Steel City this past weekend and did a photo op with the cast of Scream. And I know they were all quaking, but for me, I'm like, oh, Rose McGowan's there. And there is my friend with her copy of Brave getting signed by Rose. And I'm like, see, this is why we're friends. This is the intersection of everything. It's this love of Scream, but also the love of books.
Absolutely. And honestly, like, photo ops are fantastic, but I was recently at GalaxyCon in Columbus and sat in on a panel with Giancarlo Esposito, who was Moff Gideon in The Mandalorian, and listening to him speak, like, just being in his panel and not even getting an autograph or a photo was just phenomenal because he's an amazing speaker and he's been in so many series that it's fantastic. I could listen to him talk all day.
I love that. Thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on to chat with us about your passion and your joy about the Star Wars fandom. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a blast. I'm really glad to be here.
Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the Professional Book Nerds.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're so happy you're here today to chat fandoms. But before we do, could you introduce yourself and share a little bit about what you do at Overdrive?
Yeah. Andrea. I am the manager of the education product support team. So we work with schools and Sora with any technical questions, customizations, know-hows, and working out all those features that we can use both in Sora and Marketplace.
We love the Sora love. So this is a fun episode. We're here to chat about fandoms, mostly bookish, but also adjacent. What fandom would you consider yourself a part of that we're going to chat about today?
Well, the one fandom that you are very well aware of is the SJM fandom, but we don't have to get into that because we get into that a lot. So we'll just say there's that one.
We surprisingly have not talked about that at all on this episode. Just really? As a side note. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe because we've already talked about it.
We've talked about it. There's been episodes. It's cool.
Yeah.
I have two fandoms to discuss, and I'll touch on one of them briefly because I feel like this one has been promoted a lot more recently. Words. Because the spinoff just came out, and Emma, I know you and I have talked about this. So it's the Serpent and Dove series by Shelby Mahurin. Loved that series since day one. The covers are beautiful. The story is beautiful. It's a great enemies to lovers, forced marriage, found family sort of series. And the spinoff just came off. The Scarlet Veil came out earlier this year. Second one's coming out sometime next year. If you're someone who likes to wait for books to be done, I would wait because the Scarlet Veil ended on such a cliffhanger that I just kind of sat there. And my husband was like, are you okay? And I'm like, you can't end books like that.
Uh-oh.
He's like, well, what happened? And I won't say what happened. I'm like, no. And he's like, maybe you need to go take a minute. I'm like, I think I do.
Take a step back.
So if you're not a big cliffhanger person or you need the next book right away, I would wait until the mm-hmm. second one comes out. If you're okay with it or you love the pain of cliffhangers, go ahead and read it now. And I'll tell our listeners what I told you. You don't have to read the Serpent and Dove series for the Scarlet Veil, but it does give you a lot of background and context because those characters do show up and have a big part in the Scarlet Veil.
Yes. Yeah, because so we talked about this at length before I decided if I needed to dip into Serpent and Dove to read this book. And I know you don't have to, but I feel like you kind of do.
Yes.
You should. You don't have to, but you should. Because the main character in The Scarlet Veil, yeah, like there's too much backstory, I think, that happens in Serpent and Dove.
Yes.
Yeah. So you need
And you're it. Not going to like Saylee, I think is how you say her name. You're not going to like her in Serpent and Dove, but I don't think you're supposed to.
Mm-mm.
But as the series goes on, she develops and you'll be fine.
So this is a good point. You said you have been a fan of this series and sort of universe since the beginning. So when did you first read Serpent and Dove? When it came out?
Yes, I have it. So let's find out.
I'm like, yeah, this, I don't even remember when this came out.
2019.
Okay, that actually surprises me.
So 19, 20, 21, and then a year to write. Because she started writing something else, and then she said the story for Saylee came to her, and she had to stop writing what she was writing to pivot to this. So there's like a year gap.
For some reason, I felt like this series was a lot older than that. Even though...
just because it came out in 2019 and then 2020 and just, you know...
The lost years. Like, what?
So that's probably why.
Yeah. So is there a reason that you love this sort of universe so much?
I'm always a fan of enemies to lovers is my number one trope. You could just tell me that and I'd be like, cool, I don't care what the rest of this is about. But it takes like also like a fun spin on like magic and witches. And Scarlet Veil gets into vampires. There's mermaids, which it sounds very kitschy, but it's not. So she really does take a lot of like fun levels, and the characters look really fun and really developed, and they definitely like grow through each book, and you can kind of feel that, and you can tell that there's the growth, which is always nice in the trilogy.
And is this the trilogy for that? It's dual POV, if I'm remembering correctly. We get stuff from
yes,
Reed and now I'm blank on Lou. Any names. Lou. So if you like dual POV as well, which I do.
I think they're all dual. I think they're all dual POV.
And one of them might have use a third. It to count toward our 2024 reading challenge. Oh. Again, Joe popping in out of nowhere to just plug our own work.
Too.
But Joe, always keeping us on task, because I actually already forgot that that is one of our prompts for 2024. So, and well, it's not a duology, so never mind. But
I think The Scarlet Veil is.
Okay. So we're getting all the way. Do not quote there. Me,
but I think it's only going to be 2 books.
I think that sounds right. So we're going to go with that. And if we're incorrect, don't mention it to us, dear listeners. So I want to ask if you have like a favorite story or lengths you've gone to just to show devotion, appreciation, or passion for this fandom, whether that is like signed or special editions or like merch or bidding on things on eBay or anything like that that you want to share.
I want to say, yeah, so My Gods and Monsters is a signed first edition through Barnes & Noble. So there's that. I always tend to get the Barnes & Noble special edition. So they're all the Barnes & Noble ones if they had them. So I do that. I follow Shelby. I'll get lost in like the tags on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I have any merch or anything on those lines other than just telling people to read the book.
I'm like, I feel like we need some more. Did you debate at all over the edition of The Scarlet Veil?
No.
Okay. Because there were like a billion, I feel like, for that book. There was a Barnes & Noble. There was a regular. There was a Fairy Loot. There was a something. There was like a 10,000.
No, I just did the Barnes & Noble because I like the covers and that the bonus chapter.
Yeah.
And I usually the opposite of you, and I say that with love, where I get the one.
Yeah.
Like I give myself the one edition just because I only have so much space and I'm always a little weird about that. So.
No, I need you to teach me those ways to be like, Emma, you don't need 5. You can just have 1. Because I don't need five.
That's okay. But then when, like, I want to read those extra chapters and the eight versions of House in Flame that are coming out, I don't think eight, it's exaggerating. I can come to you and be like, hey, I'm ready for the Books a Million one. I'm ready for the Barnes and Noble one, and I can just swap them out with you so I can read that chapter and give it back.
Yes, that is true. I think, Joe, were we talking about this? I actually don't know how many editions of that book I ordered.
Yes, we were just talking about it. And no, you do not know.
And I think it's probably for the best that I don't know how many I actually bought, and they just like show up.
That's where we landed. Don't look it up. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to cancel anything. Just when they come, be excited every time. And maybe one of them will be your like physical reading copy.
Yeah.
There you go.
I may be horrified at how many I ordered.
I'm pretty sure you did order eight. I don't think there are eight different versions, but I'm pretty sure you ordered eight.
Yeah.
And I think I almost ordered three just on my in your behalf. Panic alone.
The day that they released, actually, Andrea and our colleague Maria were two of the people that we were checking for like the various editions to populate on various retailers' websites. So,
yes. That one I struggled with. That one I struggled with whether to do Barnes & Noble's or Walmart. And I ended up with the Walmart one specifically because of who the bonus story is.
Yeah. Yeah. No spoilers, but yeah.
Yes.
Andrea, you said you came with a second fandom as well.
I did. So this one is the Remnant Chronicles by Mary E. Pearson.
Ooh.
So
okay.
This one is definitely older. This comes back to my really great planning ahead where I have the books out, but did not look at anything up regarding publishing dates.
2014.
Thank you.
Yes.
So this one, The Kiss of Deception, is the first one. I'm now realizing this is also a trilogy with a duology spinoff. So apparently really picked a theme.
That's okay.
This one I remember putting on my Goodreads list and then taking off. I don't remember why. And then putting it back on a couple of like months or something later. So this is also this is an arranged marriage, kingdoms at war, found family, prophecies kind of aspect. And I love The Kiss of Deception, which is again the first book, because you have 3/5 kind of POVs, because you have Lias, who's the main character, and then you have a prince, an assassin, and then, oh my god, I can't remember their names. Caden is one, and I'm flipping through the book trying to find his name. Nope, that's Leah's chapter. Still Leah's chapter. Anyway, so when you are going through the books, you don't know who's the prince and who's the assassin. So you get chapters from the assassin, you get chapters from the prince, you get chapters from Caden, you get chapters from, and he's still not popping up, you get chapters from the other main male character, Rafe. But you don't know who's who. And so as you're reading it, you're trying to figure out like who belongs to who, but she's very good about keeping it generalized enough that you're like, oh, I think it's this person. And the next one, you're like, nope, that's not it. So that was a really cool, nice twist. And then there's The Heart of Betrayal and The Beauty of Darkness, which round out the trilogy. But yeah, it's a really cool story of like Leah, who's this princess who runs away from an arranged marriage because she's like, I don't want this. I don't want, you know, all of this on me. I don't have this prophecy that everyone says that I have. I don't have this like any kind of magic. And then she turns into like a straight up warrior, is like fighting in the war and defending her kingdom and like, you know, helping defend another kingdom throughout all this. So that's a really fun series.
And do you have any fun stories or special links to this series as well that you've gone?
I've read it 3 times.
Okay. You know, honestly, that counts.
I just checked it out on Libby.
That was fast. Convinced early.
Yeah, I'm sold. Because I appreciate that there's a completed trilogy and then the like duology spin-offs. You have like options. You can like come into the universe whichever ways you want, potentially.
Yes. Yes. And then the spin-off is kind of the same thing where it's like, this one, I feel like if you skipped the original trilogy and just read duology, it would be okay. You wouldn't get as much, but you would still missing things, but not missing as much.
Is that the Dance of Thieves one is the spinoff?
Yes, Dance of Thieves and then Vow of Thieves.
Okay.
And that is completed as well.
And you know what? I'm pretty sure I bought those books simply because I knew you liked them. So I was like, oh, these are good.
Also, a dual point of view. Look at that. I gave people options.
Yep. We're going to be starting the new year off with options for the Pro Book Nerds Reading Challenge already. But thank you, Andrea, for coming on to chat fandoms.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey there! I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.